off the beat, south the beat, north where I'm from, Virginia, of course, south the beat, north the beat, south what it's like, hey yo, it is what it is, yeah, hey yo, it is what it is, hey yo, it is what it is, it couldn't be nothing else, we brought,
hey, is Brian there?
Yeah, this is he.
Hey, what's going on, man? It's Andy Kyler. I'm calling about jams for man.
Oh, cool. Right on, man. That's so funny. I was just talking to the guy that's putting out our new album, and I saw the number and didn't realize it. And then I was like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to get a call at 6. Yeah, what's up, dude? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, man. Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah, man. That's so cool that you're doing that with the podcast. How is that for you? Is it fun?
It's going great. I mean, I get to catch up with people that I haven't seen or talked to in a long time, and
right.
You know, we have conversations about music. We kind of reminisce a little bit on the good old times back in Reston, and I also get to just find out a lot of information about what was going on that I didn't know about at the time, you know. Because
yeah, sure.
The scene was really spread out, and everybody was kind of doing their own thing, and we didn't have social media to connect us or anything like that. You find out a lot of stuff that you didn't know about before.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And it's interesting because, like, I went on to do other bands and toured a lot and all this stuff, and I was in this band Lickety Split, like in the mid to late 90s, and we would go play, you know, Alabama or wherever, like Oklahoma, like all these kind of, you know, roundabout places or whatever. And, you know, and it was funny because there'd be like, you know, a bunch of kids there in like some, you know, double wide trailer, you know, they had the show there. And inevitably, you know, the guy that put on the show would be like, man, I'm sorry, our scene is so lame. And I was like, no, dude, you have no idea. This is so cool. And, you know, I would tell them a little bit about, you know, the Reston scene. And I was like, dude, when there isn't a scene, you have to just create it, you know. And that's exactly what we did, you know. So,
well, you were.
And we did it.
I hate to even, you know, kind of. This might make you sound old or whatever saying this, but you're really the godfather of the music scene there, you know? I mean, you are in all of the seminal bands, essentially, that are connected with the music scene in Reston.
Wow. Well, not all of them. I mean, and you know what's cool is there were people before us that inspired, you know, me and the guys that I ran with, you know. I mean, I don't know how much of it you were really, you know, how much of it, like, were you there, what was your time frame, because were you telling me you kind of got into it a little later, like, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in Reston. I was born in 76 and born in Fairfax Hospital. And grew up and lived all my life in Reston until I went off to college.
Wow.
So,
but, right.
I went to Sunrise Valley, and then I went to Langston Hughes and went to South Lake.
So, wow. So you're the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Reston born and raised, you know?
Nice. Dude, that's so cool. Which of the Jam for Mans did you go to?
I'm trying to remember. I believe the only Jam for Man that I was present at were maybe 92, 93.
Okay.
I'm not even, you know, my memory is very hazy from the time also. That's part of
sure.
What I'm trying to put together is see what everybody else remembers too, because my memory isn't the clearest. But I have, hazy memories of seeing it at the Reston Community Center, and of bringing a can of food and seeing it during my high school years there.
Yeah, man, that's Right. So
this is called Jams for Man, and Jams for Man is in honor of, you know, those concerts, which were fundamental in terms of the, you know, quote unquote rest in music scene. But this isn't just about, you know, Jam for Man. It's really about our whole music scene and about the kind of family tree of Northern Virginia, DC suburbs music. And music,
yeah.
You know, that period of my youth, but I'd also love to hear about what gave rise to it and, you know, who your local influences were too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Did you want to do that now, or do you want to set up a time, or?
Yeah, no, I want to, if you have the time, I'd love to talk to you about it as long as you've got.
I can try to give it to you in a nutshell. I mean,
okay.
So looking at, we'll start here, looking at the poster that I put together for this 30 years, you know, flyer, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing I'd love to do is text, once we're done talking, text me your address, because I made 11 by 17 posters of that flyer to give out to people who really want one. And so I would be honored to mail you one or two, whatever you want, you know? Okay. So
it's my rehearsal studio.
Yeah, that's great. I'll send you two if you want, you know, and I'll put a little something together for you. So for me, I mean, it really kind of goes back to that Ruston Community Center. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it's really starting like in the mid 80s, you know, 85, 84. You know, and I'm an MTV kid and I listen to the radio, man. And like DC 101 and Q107 had these big gatherings and they would host Battle of the Bands, and they would have them at the Ruston Community Center, okay? So looking at the poster, there are bands that I added to that never played a Jam for Man. They were way before Jam for Man. So looking at the bottom row, Amethyst and Foundation and Pudwack, especially Pudwack, Pudwack were an actual punk band that played with Amethyst at the Ruston Community Center at these Battle of the Bands that I was going to, like in 7th and 8th grade, you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And I would walk, I lived on Blue Smoke Trail at the end of Soapstone, like across Lawyers Road. And so I would ride my skateboard from Blue Smoke Trail to the Ruston Community Center to attend these Battle of the Bands. And, you know, the DJs from DC 101 would show up and give out T-shirts, and the actual DJs would be there. They were like rock stars to me and everyone back in those days, right?
Awesome. I don't remember these at all. I don't even remember hearing about them. That's crazy.
Well, but how old are you?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I probably would have been like, you know, 8 or 9, maybe 10. So,
right.
I mean, I would have been listening to DC 101, but somehow I missed hearing about this thing.
Yeah, but I mean, so they would be hosting these, but they would be advertising them on the radio. It's a smash from DC 101. I'm going to be at the Ruston Community Center this Sunday to host the local Battle of the Bands. I listened to DC 101, like from the minute I woke up to the minute I fell asleep. And I knew what it was, right? Because my parents, you know, we went there good to go swimming, and I knew how to get. So I would go there, and it started right there, and they would have live bands. Pudwack played, Amethyst won every year. You know, they were more of a rock band. They would do Kiss covers and all of that.
I've never even heard of Amethyst.
What?
I've never even heard of Amethyst before.
Right. Nobody has, except for the people back then. But when I was putting the poster together, I wanted to be all-inclusive, and I wanted to put some of the bands that, you know, I think if they were around, they would have they would have played a jam for me, and or they were part of that spirit. You got me?
Yeah. So were they punk rock, or were they more?
No, they weren't punk rock. The Amethyst was just a rock band. Pudlock was a punk band. You know, not everybody on that flyer is a punk band. I mean, Split Decision played straight go-go. So Pudlock dwarfed into a band called Foundation. Members of Foundation formed Branch Manager and Repercussion. Now, these are all on that flyer, okay? So this is like a family tree here. You know, Branch Manager went on to be on a Discord Records and put two records out with Discord. They're very good albums. They're very popular. They're still around right now. I included them in the flyer because I know they would have died to play a jam for man back in the day. But they weren't even a band yet. So I included bands before Jam for Man and bands after Jam for Man. La Vida Technique never played a Jam for Man, but they're a resting band. And I wanted to be all inclusive, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what happened is I had this idea. You know, I was going to Positive Four shows, which is in D.C. Mark Anderson, the founder of this. And they would have $5 shows. We would go see Fugazi play, like, all the time, $5. And I thought, you know, what would be great, we've got this up-and-coming punk scene, you know, so starting in 86, 87, a bunch of the people that ended up being in LDK and Avail and Sleestacks, the band Sleestacks, precedes Avail. So the guitar player, Joe Banks from Avail, and the original drummer for Avail, Doug Crosby, were both members of Sleestacks, you know, and so when Sleestacks broke up, Joe Banks called me and said, hey, I'm going to make a demo. Would you be interested? I'm moving, and I want to bring a demo with me to England. And so I said, sure, because he was a big deal, and we were in the same science class at South Lakes. So we got together, we put some songs together, made a little demo, and he ended up not moving and asked if we could just keep the band thing going and asked me to pick the name, and I looked in the dictionary, and I found Avail, and it really started right there in my basement in a townhouse right off of Soapstone, you know, right near Highs. So Joe and I talked after the band got going, and LDK was in full swing, and Hostile Environment was in full swing, and some other bands, and, you know, I also was, you know, one of the people that helped start LDK. I mean, I was the original bass player, but I was not good at bass, and that kind of ended for me, but then they kept it going and put out their demos, and so then I formed Avail with Joe, and I talked to Joe, and I said, man, we should do this thing. We should put on a concert somewhere, a can of food for the homeless shelter and $5, like the, you know, Positive Four goes, because what was happening is the Reston scene was growing so big, like we would set up shows in garages, and 100 people would show up. And people were starting to come from out of town, McLean, Vienna, Fairfax, on a Friday or a Saturday.
Your first show was out of a garage, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Show?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, before Avail even played, there was house parties going on. I used to host them at my house, LDK and Hostile Environment.
We don't.
go, I don't think there's anyone to accept. Are you part of the BSR Rustin Facebook page?
No.
That's too bad because it's a great page, and I don't think anyone's running it anymore, and you have to, like, ask to join. But if you look up BSR Rustin, capital Rustin, or capital R, on Facebook, we created that page as a memorial or a celebration of that Rustin scene. So there's tons of old demo art and old flyers and old pictures and all kinds of neat stuff. And if you're a member of it, then you can see it all. But if you're not, you can only see some of it, unfortunately. But I don't think anyone runs it. So I'm all over the place. But so we came up with, you know, the idea for the show, and it was Joe Banks from Avail that coined the phrase Jam for Man, which is short for Jam for Mankind, right? And, you know, our bass player, Mikey Worsler, his mom, Patty Worsler, ran the local youth club. And so we went to her because we needed an adult. You know, the police were showing up and raiding the house parties, and the police were showing up and stopping the garage shows. And so we came to her with this idea, and she loved it, and she rallied behind us, and she got us a spot at the Herndon Community Center, is where the first Jam for Man was held. And there was about 100 people there because it was out of town, 100 or so. And then the second one was at the Rustin Community Center in 89. And like 600 people showed up. It was crazy. The fire marshal flipped, you know. And every single Jam for Man show after that, there'd be 350 people inside and 100 people waiting to get in outside. Like the first four Jam for Mans, you know, from 1988 through 1990, the original Avail played those. The fourth Jam for Man was held at the South Lakes High School football stadium. And there's footage of that on the thread that I just posted. It's all on YouTube. So,
yeah,
you know, you could look at that.
I've seen that whole thing.
Yeah. So, but there's the whole show is available. It's just I only had the money to post the digitalize the videos to DVD for Avail, because that costs a lot of money to do that and to have it posted on Facebook to give it away. I spent quite a bit of money on that. So, I mean, the point is, it ended up being a very big successful thing. And then, yeah, after 90. I left Avail. They moved to Richmond. They came back with, I don't know who, I guess Tim was the singer after that, and I think they did one more Jam for Man, but then the Sun Monkeys kind of were a big deal, and I went to a Jam for Man, like in 92, I think it was, and the Sun Monkeys were playing an Avail song, which, you know, was pretty cool for me to hear, and they did a really good job, but I mean, and, you know, and it went on for a while, and I guess it ended at some point, you know. So I don't know the details. I kind of went on with my life and got married and had a kid and formed other bands and stuff. But, I mean, dude, you know, we could go a lot deeper into this, but, I mean, that's the nutshell of how it got started. You know, Joe Banks from Avail coined the name. I did come up with the original concept and idea. You know, I made all the early flyers and the T-shirts and all that stuff, and stickers and everything that, you know, we used to go to Kent Mill Records at South Lake Shopping Center and steal a stack of Q107 or WMZQ bumper stickers, and we would spray paint them white, and then we would stencil individually each one with an Avail metal stencil and spray paint black. You know, we would make our own stickers. You know? And give them away for free. It would take hours, you know.
It's so Rustin. It's so like Northern Virginia to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got every single flyer that of every Avail show I ever played. Still, the original flyers. I've got stickers. I've got, you know, any kind of archive you could ever need, like that I was a part of, you know. But, I mean, it was a beautiful thing. And it really came out of boredom. I mean, the first, you know, we used to see Fleestacks play. They never played any garachos, but they played like Gonzaga High School in Washington, and Hostile Environment opened up. And we would have a couple of house shows with LDK and Hostile Environment. They were the big bands. Avail was kind of the third big band, but we came a little bit later. Like, they were already going a full year before Avail started, you know. You know, and it was just this great thing. Andy Wells, the singer for LDK, lived on my street. Like, he was my neighbor. We rode the same bus to school. It was very organic, and it was very, and it really, like I said, it came out of boredom. Like, we were all hanging out at the shopping center one day, and we went over to Mike Munoz's house from LDK, and his dad is a musician and had a drum set and a bass and a guitar and a PA. And he was tired of watching us do nothing. And he goes, Mike, go get your guitar. Brian, pick up that bass. Other Brian, get behind the drum set. Andy, here's a microphone. I'm going to teach you Louie Louie. And we learned Louie Louie in about 5 minutes. And literally, that's how the band started. You know? And then Hostile Environment, you know, broke up, and then the singer went on to play bass for Remission. And then that bass player left Remission and joined Avail. You know, he's the one playing bass at the Jam for Man concert in the video. But he was the original singer for Hostile Environment, you know. And in that video, we play a Hostile Environment song, and he sings it, you know. It's pretty incredible the way it all kind of turned out.
Tell me more about Andy Wells, because you dedicate one of the songs to him during that show.
Yeah, he was my neighbor, you know, one of my best friends. We grew up together. He is the original singer for LDK. Great guy, heavily influenced by Tony Cadena from The Adolescents and Jason Sears from RKL. That was kind of his style. He and I were friends for a long time, and we used to sit around and record ourselves on like a box radio, like trying to figure out how to be in a band. Like, we didn't know anything about it. And he ended up, he was there that day and learned Louie Louie with us, and great guy. You know, he's in the, you know, he was killed, when he was 19, he was in a car with a drunk driver, and he got killed, man. The car crashed into a tree and he died, you know. And so it really shocked the whole scene, you know. But he was a beautiful dude. He was a, you know, just a kind-hearted guy. And, you know, he was probably the one person in town that everybody liked, and everybody was, you know, deeply affected by him leaving, you know, so early. You know, the accident happened July 27th, 1990, you know. I mean, so just a month or so after that Jam for Man 4 video, like, he was there that day. Like, he was at the show, you know, and we hung out, you know, and then, like, about a month later, the accident happened. So it's still a thing, man, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I wanted you to tell people about him, because those people,
yeah,
that don't know, you know. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, there's pictures of him somebody posted last night in the thread, and, you know, he's still, you know, in all of our hearts. I mean, I've never seen anybody's loss affect so many people so deeply, you know, and for so long. Like, he's been gone longer now than he ever was here, and it's still fresh, you know. It's, you know, we don't get over it, we get through it, right? But there's an Avail song on the second release called Reaching Out, and it's called Blue Smoke's Gone, right? And Blue Smoke Trail is the street that we grew up on. And when he left LDK to go to South Carolina, he, like, you know, he left the band. They played their last show at the Safari Club, and he left, you know, on good terms and no problem, and he moved away. And I wrote that song as a tribute to his effort. You know, it wasn't written after he passed away. It was written while he was alive. And he heard it and he liked it, you know, and he came to practice and we played it for him. And so there's that song that's, you know, you can download all the Avail stuff. It's all on, you know, Bandcamp or SoundCloud or whatever. It's all on there. All the songs that I ever recorded with Avail is all available, you know. But that song, Blue Smoke Gone, is for him. And it was just written lyrically about his journey that he was about to embark on.
Keep your head in.
how did that help you get through adolescence in Reston growing up in Northern Virginia?
For me, it was critical and it was crucial, and I don't even know what I would have done if I wasn't doing that. Originally I probably started in like 87, 86 trying to write lyrics. I had never really written poetry. I knew how to write a haiku or something that I probably learned in school. I just started trying to write songs in my head, and then I had been writing for a little while, and I really had, you know, there's a song I wrote called Momentary that I wrote in 88, and another song I wrote called Another Place in 88. I wrote them both the same night, and I liked them, and I hung on to them for a long time. But I just started writing to kind of get stuff out of my head and just to see what it was like, and it felt good, and it was relieving, and it was something that I felt I needed to do. And I had written several pieces when Joe called me about recording this little demo for him to go off to England. And so he had these songs. I had already written these lyrics, and I had made this sort of transformation in my heart, in my life, where I wanted to not just be a punk rocker that spray painted the walls and broke bottles. I wanted to be, you know, I was so influenced by 7 Seconds and the positive force and making a change, you know. I mean, when I heard Kevin Second say, you know, let's not fuck shit up, let's fix shit up, like, that really spoke to me, you know. And so I wanted to be that kind of person. And so I kind of had a George Costanza moment, and, you know, when I was like 18, and I just went, you know what, I'm not going to do any of that anymore. I'm going to do the complete opposite. And so I just completely had this moment, and I've been kind of pursuing it ever since, really, you know. So, I mean, the lyrics, writing lyrics with that attitude in mind helped a lot. Like, it helped helped shape the person that I was striving to become, you know. So then you add, you know, such a positive word like a veil behind positive lyrics, and I think it's an unstoppable force, you know.
Well, so what was your journey like after Veil? I mean, what kind of...
Well, you know, it's weird, man, because I was in a Veil still when Andy's car accident happened. And so it was shocking. You know, we were just getting ready to move to Richmond. Like, we had already gotten a place. I had already paid my rent. I had already... They had already all gone down there. I had gone down to the house, checked it all out. I really didn't want to move to Richmond. I wanted to move to Arlington and become more of a DC band, because we were already playing DC and we were a big part of the Positive Force. We were in talks with Amanda Mackay she was going to help us put out our first 7-inch. You know, we were kind of a big deal even back then. You know, and I wanted to jump Arlington, D.C. and really become a D.C. band. And Joe, for some reason, really wanted to move to Richmond to get away from, you know, his parents were divorcing, and I guess he just wanted to get out of town. And Tim's older brother had moved to Richmond for college, and, you know, we had gone down there and hung out, and, you know, they just fell in love with Richmond, So I kind of had no choice. Like, they were like, well, it's, you know, we voted, and I was outvoted, and they all went with Joe. And so I went with Joe for a little while, but I wasn't happy about it. And so I was here working a job to try to raise some money to buy us a van so we could start touring more regularly. And, you know, since we're going to be in Richmond. And that's when the accident happened, and I don't know, man, like, there's something happened in me, and I just was like, you know what, my best friend, one of our best friends just died. I'm not really ready to, like, leave town. I'm not really ready to, like, leave everybody at this moment. I don't really want to go to Richmond, and I just made this choice to just say, fuck it. And then, you know, at the time, the guys in LDK, they were getting ready to get back together and play some shows with Andy and Jerry, the bass player, was like en route from Seattle, and when the accident happened, and they came to me and they were like, look, man, you know, we really want to do some shows. Our drummer, Tim Berry, was the original really good drummer for LDK. So they said, look, we really want you and Tim to do a show with a, you know, join LDK for one show, and then we're going to end it, you know, and that's it. But we want to do one show in tribute to Andy and the whole thing. And I said, sure. And Tim said, sure. And so we were going to do this, you know, and then go on and do a Veil and move to Richmond, and that was going to be our story. And Tim kind of flaked out and wouldn't leave Richmond and didn't attend the funeral or anything. And I don't know, I guess I just didn't understand. And so they ended up getting another drummer, and I ended up leaving a Veil and immediately joining LDK. And so I sang for LDK for a full year. We played the Bayou, and we opened for the Cro-Mags, and we did all kinds of neat stuff. And then I ended up kind of getting, you know, done. I got done with that. I wasn't really going to, you know, they didn't want to write new songs. They didn't want to do anything. And I didn't really want to be in LDK. And, you know, I had gotten married, and, you know, our daughter was about to be born. And, you know, I just didn't have time to stick around, you know, with this band anymore. So, you know, we kind of just parted ways, and they ended up getting another, some other singer for a little while, and then they kind of fizzled out, you know. And then, you know, once our daughter was born and we bought our house and we, you know, had my job, and I kind of got steady in my new life, you know, at 21, you know, you got to think, man, I was a pretty young guy.
Yeah.
By 22, I was established. I had everything figured out. And so I started doing other music, you know, and I formed Face First with some guys. This band Face First, and then I formed a band called Product, and then I was in a band called Lickety Split, and I did a project called Cash with a K, and, you know, Cash did one recording for Ebullition compilation, Product did a tape, and we toured and played Richmond a lot, and then I went on to, you know, be in Lickety Split, and we did some records and toured a lot, and then I was in so many other bands after that. I was in, you know, it's hard to keep track, dude, like a lot, you know. The last band I was in before the band I'm in now was a band called BSR, which featured guys from LDK and other Reston bands. And we put out a 7-inch of 6 songs, original songs, this was just a few years ago. There's footage of BSR on YouTube.
All right, dude. We're BSR from Reston, Virginia. Let's do it, Mr. Ben.
And then that kind of fizzled out, and then I started Ruined by Design. You know, and I've been, Ruined by Design just put out, we're just recorded a whole album and did other recordings. All of our stuff's on Bandcamp. So I've just never really stopped moving, dude. It's been 30 years, and I haven't really stopped, and I think I'm in the prime of my life, to be honest. You know, I have more energy now on stage than I did when I was a kid.
That's crazy. You had a lot of energy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be 49 years old this July, and I'm just getting started. I'm rolling, dude, you know.
That's good to hear. I like the Ruined by Design. I guess it's an EP. My favorite thing about it is when it comes up on my iTunes, it says 4 songs, 6 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we did a single, and then we did a cassette. Like, we went back to the egg, you know what I mean? We literally made physical cassettes. Like, of our first official release, we made physical copies on cassette. You know, I think I've got like 5 left. I think we made 100. I think we have 5 left. You'll love this. Then we, huh?
I said kids are buying them and listening to them again. You know?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, they sell really well. And but the neat thing is, so then we did a 4 song CD, like with the little slip covers. And here's what, you'll love this. Then we went back, so I pitched the guys in the band now, and it's neat, our bass player, Andrew Blitch, his brother, Carter Blitch, was in the band Knothead, which are on that poster. Carter Blitch left Reston, moved to California, and has been the drummer for JFA for the last, like, 12 or 15 years. So I pitched the idea, so on our CD, it's only on the CD, it's not on the download, it's not on Bandcamp. If you listen to our 4-song CD, a 5th song comes up, and it's a Fleestack song that we covered. So we're looking at, you know, JFA are coming over to the East Coast at the end of this, in the fall, and we're going to play some, you know, big cities with them. And then we're supposed to fly to the West Coast and open up for them on the West Coast. I mean, so it's still going. You know, I'm getting ready to finish, have most of my book written. I have a book in progress. It's just about done. I just got to do the layout now. And it's going to be 30 years of poetry. It's going to be from 88 to 18. It's going to have pictures of a lot of old flyers from all the bands I've been in. It's going to have a lot of song lyrics. But then it's going to have a little bit at the bottom of the page, insight on what the lyrics, you know, are about, or what they were doing at the time, or if they're attached to a certain recording. So that's something special that I'm doing for me and my friends, you know.
That's awesome. I'll definitely... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I'll send you one. But, you know, that's what I mean, dude. Like, you know, it's fun to put out the flyer, the Jam for Man thing. Like, I love looking backwards. I'm very proud of, like, what we did. I can't believe sometimes what we accomplished. But I'm also moving forward. Like, I don't just sit back and rest on the good old days. Like, I've been moving forward all along. I mean, you know, and my life went on. I mean, my ex-wife and I had another kid. We bought a bigger house. You know, we did end up divorcing, but she's still one of my best friends. She was a big part of the early Jam for Man shows. She's the one that videotaped all the performances that now are lost forever. But she used to go to Errol's Video at South Lake Shopping Center and rent a video camera and videotape the shows. You know, and the guys in the Veil have all that stuff, Tim or Joe or whoever. And, you know, those guys don't really talk to me anymore. They're still pissed, you know, 20 years later that I left the band, and they went on to be hugely successful, you know, without me. So I'm not sure where all that comes from. It's bizarre to me, you know. You know, I actually put out a CD 100 copies were pressed a few years ago of the Avail recordings, the two albums that I did, all on one CD, like professional, with a booklet and made stickers and the whole thing, but they're gone. Like, you know, I could make, you know, ditto copies of the covers if you wanted, but I mean, the originals are gone.
Well, my first Avail tape that I had, a buddy of mine, Andy LaMonica, had taped for me, and it has Stacey 8 on one side, and it has Sun Monkey's Brotherhood on the other.
Neat. Yeah, Satiate's the first record they did after I left, but I mean, I wrote some of the songs on there. I wrote, Bob's Crew is from the first album that they re-recorded, and I wrote Upward Grind, and I wrote some other song, I can't remember now, but I mean, yeah, that's a great album, you know what I mean, that's a great album, and the Sun Monkeys were great, and, you know. But yeah,
and it's an even better tape in that it has both on it. You know?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, my favorite Avail album is Over the James. I think that's a masterpiece. Like, I love that album.
Yeah, but the thing is, I want people to be able to hear this stuff as much as possible because they are great albums, and you know, some people from this scene got their music out, you know, to more and more people, and were able to continue it and keep it going, and eventually get a certain amount of distribution. And then, like you said, some of these bands that were amazing, you know, unbelievable bands, nobody's ever heard before. And, you know, maybe it's just because the Reston scene was so small and Reston such a small place, or it's just because, you know, those bands broke up or whatever, and they only made 50 tapes or what have you. Anything.
I mean, you have to also kind of look at it, you know, this way too. I mean, for a lot of people, you know, as heartfelt as they may have been at 15, 16, maybe even till they were 20, after the time ended, a lot of people just kind of chalked it up to like, okay, well, now I'm going to go to college and drink beer and, you know, and be a frickin' frat boy or whatever. That's not my story, you know. A lot of people stuck it out. You know, a lot of people, this isn't a phase. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lyric. This isn't a phase I'm going through. This is what I wanted to do all along. You know, punk rock saved my life. Skateboarding, punk rock. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do, and then I found this, and I really, you know, I really haven't looked back, you know. I mean, I never made alternate plans to be a jock or anything later in my life. Like, this is it. This is what I'm doing, you know. There isn't a second plan, you know. But a lot of people, you know, they don't look at that old music or that time the way you do. You know, they don't think it's important. Even people in LDK, like, they don't think it's a big deal, or they're not going to invest in money to reissue that stuff or remaster it, because to them it's a dead issue, you know. And it's, you know, there's been tons of people that have said, man, I'll put that out on CD, or we can press vinyl and we can put that stuff out, and there's no interest. You know, the guys in the bands are difficult to deal with, and they would be very defensive. You know, I'm getting heat for putting this poster out. The poster that I just put out, I've gotten bad feedback from people by just including them. I mean, you have no idea, like, how difficult it is to deal with some of the people involved in the scene. And that's why the scene ended. It ultimately imploded.
Well, you know, it imploded, but then the shrapnel of it, or, you know, the pieces continue to go on and outward in other directions. And
oh, yeah, sure.
And, you know, and the tree limbs spread out. And so, mm-hmm. doing Ruined by Design is a continuation of that scene. And even in the wake of that initial scene, you know, my high school scene, because I went to South Lakes from 92 to 95, you know, the Sun Monkeys were there in my, like, freshman year. But they were gone after that. And, you know, our scene thrived after that. And,
right,
and,
that's what I mean.
And some of them were the little brothers of your scene, you know, like Tom Maskey or Andrew Blitch. You know, these are the little brothers of that scene continuing to play music and make their own awesome music and
right.
Awesome rest in scene too.
Right. Like Tom Maskey was in the Levito Technique, and that's in Fan Vistas, who helped me put the poster together. He was in the Levito Technique, and they didn't, you know, and so that's why we wanted to include them in it, because it did reverberate out. I mean, I look at, like, what you just said is very, feels good. Like, what it to me was is like when you throw a rock into the water, and yeah, the initial hit is this thing, but then it reverberates out and it goes on and on and on. You know, you have to understand, like, there was a scene before our scene, and that was what influenced me to start a scene. That's what influenced us to start a scene. You know, like, Foundation was around when Sleestacks was around, and I think before, and Pudwack was before them. So it's been generational, you know, but something happened during our time where we actually all bonded together. Like, the severity of it, I mean, it literally, like, I would go, you know where the highs was?
Yeah.
So it's about to get demoed, I think, because it's empty again. But, dude, me and this guy, Brian McCracken, okay, this is how serious we were. And this will give you an idea of what we were doing. Brian, if we were going to have a garage show, okay, on Friday, we would go to Highs Thursday night, and we would take 32 milk crates, okay? And I already had all the wood at my house, and I would keep it there stored in the back. We would carry the wood, the plywood, to wherever the show was going to be. We would go and take 32 milk crates from Highs, and we would build a stage and tape it all together with duct tape and the whole thing so that the bands would have a stage to play on. And then after the show Friday night, we would take the stage apart, and then we would return the 32 milk crates back to Highs. And then the next show, we would go and steal them again, build the stage, and then return the crate. Because, you know, what are you going to do with 32 milk crates, right? You know, and for the weeks between shows. So that's how dedicated we were.
Brian, you're so fucking punk rock, I can't even take it, man.
I mean, yes, we were stealing, but really, in our hearts, we were borrowing, because, you know, we don't want to actually steal, you know.
Yeah, man.
And so we would put the effort into returning them. That's, to me, that's what it was all about. Like, it was that kind of stuff. And what's great is I didn't have a car, so I had to orchestrate dudes with a car to help me do this. This was my plan, you know what I mean? Like, so it was pretty excellent.
Yeah. I don't even know, like, how would you even learn how to do that? How would you even know to, like, take 32 milk crates and, you know, and build a stage?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, trial and error, man. We definitely made some mistakes, and, you know, and it's so funny, man. Like, when I first switched from bass to vocals, nobody knew what a PA was. Like, we would just plug a microphone into a bass amp, and you could get your voice louder. It seemed to work. No one realized that it was destroying the bass amp or any of this stuff. So I remember when I made the switch from bass to vocals, and my bass amp was destroyed. And I remember telling somebody, I was like, man, now I need to get a new bass amp. And they were like, why? And I'm like, so I can sing through it. And they were like, well, dude, why don't you just get a PA system? And I was like, what's that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we just didn't know, you know? And so then I ended up getting a, Andy Wells bought the first Reston PA system, and everybody shared it. You know, we would rotate the PA around, and we would all go to each other's band practices and hang out and sing along. And then, you know, then the Remission would have band practice the next day, and they would borrow the PA, and we wore Andy's PA out. And then I bought a bigger PA, and everybody shared my PA. And I would, you know, bring my PA over for LDK to use. And then I would bring it over for each manager to use. And, you know what I mean? Like, this is what we used to do. It really was a community for quite a while, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the most beautiful things that I'm hearing is that, like, even though you guys are punk rock, you were, you know, you had a social conscience.
Mm-hmm.
You were, yeah. you were responsible about the way that you conducted your business and conducted yourself. Even if you didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, we really didn't know. And, like, and you know what's funny, man, is, like, when Avail started to tour, we didn't understand, like, my girlfriend's family had a van, like an old Dodge Rambler or a Dodge Prospector van, like a really cool van. So we were the first band in town to have access to a van or where we could all ride together to a show and, you know, like, be a big deal, right? So we had a friend that got us a show at CBGB's. So we drove to New York to play a show in CBGB's, and we slept in the van that night and drove home the next day. Or we would find a friend that could get us a show in West Virginia, and we would drive to West Virginia, play the show, and drive back. Or we found a friend that could get us a show in Philadelphia. We would drive to Philadelphia and drive back. It never occurred to us to connect a show from Philadelphia to, you know, Boston to back, you know, we just didn't know how to tour. We didn't know anything about anything. You know, we just never knew what we were doing, but we were doing it. You know what I mean? And it was such innocence, and we, you know, we would show up and just do our thing, you know, and it was great.
Before we go, if maybe you could just, like, tell the people. Or I kind of like everybody as a last sort of statement to say kind of what, you know, what making music in Northern Virginia or in Reston meant to you. You know, what did the area itself, how did that, you know, shape you and shape your music, if you had to sum it up?
Wow. Well, you know, making music in Northern Virginia was empowering, and it meant everything to me. You know, what I love about punk rock and I loved about that time is the essence of it really was truly DIY, you know, do it yourself. I mean, we really did accomplish a lot. You know, these Reston kids, they really did do some neat things, and so many of them have gone on to do so many great things. But, you know, in a nutshell, it means everything to me because for me, like I said earlier, like, punk rock saved my life, and watching others before me sort of pave that way made it safe, but it also made it dangerous and exciting, you know? So it means everything to me. And that's why I'm still doing it. That's why I'm still rolling and enjoying life. And, you know, right now I'm in the best band I've ever been in as far as, you know, people getting along and the music's great. And, you know, I just don't see any reason to stop. You know, this isn't a phase. It's what we do, you know. And so, you know, I really appreciate you, you know, having me on and talking and stuff. You know, it's really neat.
No, thank you. This has been amazing. This has been exactly what I wanted these conversations to be like when I started this thing.
Good. That's great.
Let the people know where can we catch Ruined by Design, where can they see you live, where can they get copies of your music. I'll attach links to everything. But
yeah, Yeah, Ruined by Design's every single song we've recorded thus far, except for the new record that's coming out this summer. Everything is on Bandcamp.com. You can download it or listen to it for free. The artwork's is up there. Everything's there, you know. That's what's up with that, you know, with as far as our band is concerned, you know. And we're playing a lot of shows in Virginia. We're doing some shows in the fall with JFA. Nothing's been officially scheduled yet. But, you know, this Saturday we're playing in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. as part of Martin Luther King's, March for the Poor People's March on Washington, you know. I mean, that's sort of like the spirit of Jam for Man is still going on. You know, it's still happening, and we're still a part of it, you know, these people. You know, it's very cool. It's an honor. So, and thank you for your service to, you know, not only the memory of what we accomplished, but the ongoing and ongrowing, experience in this punk rock thing. This is a great service that you're providing. So, thank you.
Well, Brian, thanks for being on. Thanks for talking to me. And I hope to have more great conversations with you on and off the air.
Sounds great, man. Take care and text me your address, dude. I'll send you that rest and care package.
All right,
I promise.
Believe me, I will.
All right, man. Take care.
You too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.